Does it seem strange or even creepy to live with a daily reminder of your own mortality? Because people used to do it all the time. Victorian homes were full of objects we'd find ghoulish today, unless you have a taste for the morbid. Joanna Ebenstein is the founder and director of the new Morbid Anatomy Museum in Brooklyn. It's a space filled with objects that reveal just how much our thinking about death has changed over the years. Steve Paulson stopped by recently, and Joanna gave him a tour.
I'm interested in object lessons from the past that make us think differently about the present. So, for example, looking at things like the anatomical Venus. So, 18th century reclining wax woman, life-size, dissectable, real human hair, pearls, tiaras. They were made in the 1790s. They're made of wax, beeswax, turpentine, and they have real glass eyes, they have real human hair, and they dissect. And if you see by her feet, all of those organs, so you can kind of unpack her and dissect her. And she was intended to teach the general public about human anatomy in the late 1700s in Italy.
And then we have a skull
here.
We
have a real human skull. That was a donation from a man whose wife didn't want it in the house anymore. This is true. We get a lot of things that way, which is one of my favorite things.
So just for the uninitiated, just sort of looking at this, you have photos, you have glass cases stuffed with things, you have all kinds of odd pictures. It's kind of an old-time cabinet of curiosity.
Yeah, that we're definitely inspired here by pre-rational museums, by cabinets of curiosity and kind of museums before they solidified into what we now think of them today.
So what would you say is the animating idea behind the Morbid Anatomy Museum? Do you have a mission here?
Our mission is to educate about and exhibit objects that fall between the cracks. So things that aren't taken seriously by other institutions. If you have a moment, I can take you to this. So this is the temporary exhibition space, and this is called the Art of Mourning. And here we have a hair art shadow box. And do you see that wreath of flowers there? Look closely.
Yeah.
This is all human hair.
Wow.
Wound very tightly. And that photo in the center, as you can tell by the black band around it, is a mourning photograph. So it's saying that the girls in that picture are dead. So their hair is woven into this wreath. It's probably woven with other family members' hair.
And we should mention, the weaving is elaborate in sort of bows and...
Bows, flowers, there's butterflies up there. There's all sorts of things. And this is a part of history, an important part of the Victorian era that really people don't talk about anymore. What is it? Is it art? It's not really art. Is it folk art? It's kind of folk art, but it's not what we think of as folk art.
And this is this photo of these two girls who've died with this elaborate wreath made of human hair. What would people have done with this? Why would they have created this?
They would have hung it on their wall. So almost everything you see in this room was either to be worn on the body or exhibited in the home, and it was to express mourning and loss. And working with hair takes a long time, and it's really hard. This was probably over a year's work of somebody that would be seen as pathological today.
Okay, well, what else do we have here?
Do you see that beautiful brooch right there? And that white woven bit, that's human hair as well.
Wait, that's human hair?
Yes, that's human hair.
Oh my God, it's so fine and tiny.
And beautifully worked, right? And then if you look, this is what I learned putting this exhibition together. Sepia was also a process where you would dissolve the hair of the beloved in liquid of some sort and paint with it. So that's actually human hair, that brown paint in there.
And so here we go over to this part of the room here.
So this is a collection by a local collector named Stanley Burns. He's one of the preeminent photography collectors in the world, so far as I know. And he had been finding all these photos, like this one here, of sleeping children. And he's a doctor. And at some point he realized, no, these are not sleeping children, these are dead children.
This photo of this, it does look like a sleeping child, but then when you say it's a dead child, oh my God.
And then you see it, right? You look closer and you see that that's what it is. And that this was actually a very common practice in the 19th century. And again, it looks strange to us. It looks morbid, you might say.
Right.
But clearly, it was not seen that way at the time.
Right. Okay, so what do we have in the cabinet
here? In here, this is kind of a chilling photograph of a husband and a wife holding at what you can tell when you look is a dead child.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also a dead child right there.
This photo after photo of parents with their dead children.
And I will tell you, I went through boxes and boxes of these to select them for the exhibition.
The contrast between today and then is so startling. We would never do that today.
We would never
commemorate the dead. For one thing, we wouldn't really commemorate death at all.
Yeah, I think that's right. Death has gone underground, I think. At this time, even if you wanted to deny death, you could not. 3 in 5 children died before reaching adulthood. People butchered their own animals, generally speaking. Horses were being used for carts, and they were dead in the street. This idea that death is an exotic other, which I think is how we feel about it now, I think is very new to our time and place. I don't think there's ever been a time in history when it's been that way. I mean, in this time, people died in the home. As you can see by these photos, people were having funerals in the parlor, which then becomes the funeral parlor, and the parlor at home becomes the living room. This all becomes outsourced. People start to die in hospitals. The dead aren't seen as much, and I think this is where this big shift comes.
So was that part of your mission here, then, to kind of bring death out from the shadows?
Yeah, I mean, that's been a mission of Morbid Anatomy as a project for a while, I think. My own history is that I grew up in California, where images of death were pretty much relegated to youth subcultures, the goths and the heavy metal kids and horror movies and that sort of thing. And I went to Europe for the first time when I was 16, and I saw churches in Germany, and I saw the winged death heads, and I saw the jeweled skeletons in churches, and I saw the paintings of martyrs, crucifixions, and other ghastly assassinations, and I had never known that beauty and death could go together before. And when I saw these images, it really made me ask a lot of questions, and that's kind of inadvertently what led to this project.
Obviously, you have a fascination with the morbid. I mean, are you kind of a morbid person yourself?
Do I seem like a morbid person?
No,
I'm not. See, I would actually argue part of why I use the name Morbid Anatomy for my blog is, for the longest time, I have been called morbid, and I thought a lot about that. I accepted that for the longest time, and then I began to think, well, is it morbid to think about death? And in my opinion, no. In my opinion, it's morbid not to think about death. We're all going to die. We all know we're going to die. To me, it's the most essential human problem there is to come to terms with that. So suddenly we're in a period when it's considered inappropriate to have a serious discussion about death. We're allowed to watch horror movies. We're allowed to listen to heavy metal, but we're not allowed to have serious conversations about it. And I think there's something really wrong with that.
Joanna Ebenstein is the founder and director of the new Morbid Anatomy Museum in Brooklyn. You can see some of the things she and Steve looked at on our website.